99.5 FM on your dial, bringing you ideas, concepts, and guests to help you lead a more positively minded life. This past Tuesday, my friends, we presented to you some information about what is called obsessive-compulsive disorder. And the result of that was we were flooded with letters from people who were grateful for us for the presentation, the way we brought it to you. Now, that program that you heard will be can be heard on the Internet. You can get that on the Internet, those of you who are interested who didn't hear it. We want to talk about this again because there's a little more information that we have brought to me by my associate here, Stephanie Dombra. In fact, I'm going to have you on the air, Stephanie, to answer some questions about this because you really have worked with this quite a bit. We're going to talk about obsessive compulsive disorder. It's a fancy word. You know, a few minutes ago you were listening to somebody, if you were on air, you were listening to somebody talk about some of the brain organs, and we're learning more and more about the organs of the brain. We used to, in the 70s, we used to throw it away and say, no good, you know, just the emotions is all that count. You got to have feelings, nothing more than feelings. And then we started spelling feeling with three E's. Feelings, tell me what you feel. And feelings became so important that we bypassed a lot of the science of it. We said it was scientific hogwash. I, being one of these feelings people back in the 70s, began to learn more and more that everything that I knew or believed was validated by some scientific observation, especially recent brain scans, which have been showing me, oh, this really is going on. There really is stuff going on. For example, night sweats or night terrors. You know, night terrors are correlated with a very high activity in the amygdala. What is the amygdala? The amygdala is this tiny little almond-shaped organ somewhere around your brainstem. It's a tiny little thing, but boy, does it do a lot of work. The amygdala, so we have to talk about organs. We used to talk about the heart and the liver and, you know, and the brain, those used to be, we used to think of those as the organs. Then somebody discovered the skin is an organ. That was an interesting thought. And, you know, it is. And I wonder if the soul is an organ. You know, wonder what kind of organ. Maybe it's a Hammond organ. Anyway, what we have to do is we have to figure out what is going on here. And now we can observe it. We can watch it. And here's what we're learning. We're learning that in the brain, my friends, there is this interaction between not just one little spot, but four little spots, and maybe even more. And they interact. The amygdala is one. Then there's the orbital frontal cortex. That's easy enough, front of your brain, right? The caudate nucleus and the thalamus, all of these are active with each other, interacting. Now, when they interact, it's a circuit, you know, and it's a circuit that works really well all the time to keep us going. And what the circuit does is it helps us anticipate, helps us observe, helps us react, helps us stay energized. It's a fabulous circuit. It's a wonderful machine. Probably if you add it all up, it wouldn't weigh more than an ounce. You know, of brain matter, you put it all together, is responsible for almost everything you do that's fun and lively and... But there it is. It's the important ounce, you know? The more of it you have, the more activity you have, size matters. Give me a big amygdala. Anyway, how does this, all this work? And what does this have to do with OCD? Well, we were learning, last Tuesday we learned that the anterior cingulate gyrus, which is the backside of your cingulate gyrus. what fun. It's the part of your brain that helps you focus attention and make decisions. And there are certain people like hoarders, H-O-A-R-D-E-R-S, people who hoard, they have a low functioning there. They can't organize. Do you have a low functioning in your anterior cingulate gyrus? I mean, maybe you do. And maybe all you need is a little brain food, you know, like they have fish food. You know, maybe you could just take a little brain food and you powder it on your brain, your head, you rub it into your skull with a little olive oil. My grandmother believed if you put anything on your head with olive oil, it would get in your skin. So, you know, and she's true. Olive oil is a great transducer. It takes stuff right through the skin. So maybe we could get to doing that eventually. And I know I'm sounding silly, but I'm trying to lead you to appreciate the beauty of all of this stuff that we're learning. So what does this have to do with the horror, the terror of living an obsessive-compulsive life? Now, remember, an obsessive-compulsive thoughts are thoughts that are unwelcomed and repeated, and you can't get out of them, right? OCD, you just can't stop what you're doing and what you're thinking. In relationships, it could be the compulsive search for a flaw or the focus on a flaw of a partner. Sometimes it could be a focus on a relationship itself. You know, why doesn't he call? Why won't he call? Will he call? Will he not call? Won't he call? How will he call? When will he call? You know, that kind of thing. That's obsessive compulsive stuff. It's obsessive when you're focusing on it. It's compulsive when you do behaviors related to it. Fear of injuring other people, that's a real big one that people think about and think about all the time. Responsibilities, people feel responsible for the life of other people and that they're going to hurt people. Then we had that wonderful word yesterday, scrupulosity, which is an intolerance of asymmetry. It's an intolerance of asymmetry. If anything's not symmetrical, You got to fix it. You got to line it up. Contamination anxiety. You know, a lot of people who are afraid of things, disease and stuff, and everything has to be washed. Sexual orientation fears is another form of obsessive compulsive disorder. And obsessive hypochondria, which we talk about a great deal because a lot of the people who listen to WBAI are obsessive hypochondriacs. They're a little too worried about everything. It's too much. Worry a little bit. But when you worry a lot, that's it. And there it is. There's the basis of it. Worry a lot. Worry a lot is the symptom itself. A little earlier today, I was speaking to someone who was having an experience of looking inside and feeling feelings that she wasn't used to feeling. She was going to examine some of the stuff that happened to her in her early childhood, which was very painful. But she had a trait, and her trait was whenever she got vulnerable, she started questioning everything. And she would actually question things down to, why did you have the papers lined up this way as opposed to that way? When I filled out the papers, why did she give me a pen of this kind and not a pen of this kind? Why did I have to write in blue ink instead of black ink? Now, this kind of thing interrupted everything that I could have possibly done. And what she was doing is blocking me with her questions, which people very often do when they are afraid. And her questions were getting in the way, and the questions got so much in the way that I had to stop her and say, wait a minute, you're paying all this money, don't you want me to use my tools instead of just answering all of your questions? And she said, I know, I do that all the time, I do it everywhere. See, people who have got obsessive compulsive disorder usually know it. But very often they don't, and they live sitting somewhere worrying. My grandmother, oh my God almighty, she used to do the rosary. And she would worry about her children over and over again. And she would, and the behavior she would do was rosary beads. Hail Mary, Jesus. This is what you'd hear her doing. She'd be nodding her head off in a corner somewhere by a window, worrying and saying prayer at the same time. Somehow the brain needs to organize itself. Repeated patterns help a disorganized brain somehow feel better by giving it some sense of organization. So when a person feels at loose ends, loose threads, for whatever reason, they tend to do a behavior that is a repetitive behavior. Get that? And I'm going to say it again to you. When your brain goes out of whack, when this circuit that you have between all these fine little organs is not in perfect balance, what you do is you go and you try to do something, an activity, that instead of having all of this general anxiety to it, which is the way you feel disorganized, you feel crazed, you know, you feel like you're out of control, you do something that's an organized thing, like hand washing, like cleaning the surfaces of things, like arranging things, like calling up people. So what we're going to focus on today is the different approaches to dealing with this, and we talked about one yesterday, which was called emotional desensitization. Tuesday. Emotional desensitization, and that's where a therapist takes a client who has this disorder and puts them in the very condition that they fear, if they're afraid of germs or afraid of something, and desensitizes them to it. That's one way that you approach it. I have to go back for a moment. When a brain is active, now this is, Stephanie, help me with this. As you see this, talk to me about the engine of itself. Talk to me about how you see when the brain goes out of balance.
In some ways, it's like a car transmission. Okay, so normally we have a car that has an automatic transmission. And to just make an analogy, because I really don't know all the details in the brain as well. Okay, that circuit gets stuck, so to speak. One of these circuits in the brain gets stuck, and we can't turn the page, so to speak. We can't shift the gear automatically the way the brain is supposed to do it. So when we're stuck on a thought, we have to learn to manually switch it to another thought, so to speak.
All right, so let me use that metaphor. If you're using a transmission, the transmission has many parts. It has a gear shift, it has a couple of different gears, it has a normal shift that takes place. In all of us, we have an automatic transmission,
correct?
Right? All of us have an automatic transmission. And then what happens is sometimes you get stuck in one gear. When you get stuck in one gear, that's an obsessive thought. And when you get stuck in it, you're saying, Stephanie, and you're saying this, I want to say that Stephanie is a neuroscientist. She is somebody who's a psychotherapist who focuses on neuroscience and contributes as much to the work that she does as a therapist. She adds a great deal of her knowledge and information that she researches over and over again. So Stephanie, when a person has an obsessive compulsive loop that they're in, you're saying the gear of the transmission is caught somewhere. Haven't we all felt that way sometimes? You know, we have worries. There are great worries. There are people who worry so much they're in a class of their own. And the suffering is all in the head, you know. They feel it all in the head. They worry. I know people who worry about everything. They look, it's like they have bait. Everything is bait for worry. If you give them a dozen roses, if you give them a dozen flowers, they worry if the flowers are going to live. They worry if the water is going to get contaminated. They worry what they're going to do, you know, about where the flowers were cut from. They worry about the cost of the flowers. So the worry is automatic. It just kind of kicks in. It's like instead of having the circuit there, oh, here are flowers. Flowers are acceptable. These are the testimony of affection for you. And running it through your mind, you have to, and you get stuck on these things. You just can't get out of them. Now, this is what you're saying about the stuck brain. I call it the brain is burning. Now, I say the brain is burning, Stephanie, because Because what I see is I see this gear shift, but the trouble with the gear box, when a gearbox, when a thing is stuck in a certain gear, it generates heat, you know, and it gets hotter and hotter and hotter. And there's a strange correlation I'll bet is true about people who are obsessive compulsive is that they have brain heat. Because if you have a circuit that's interrupted, just like any circuit, you have heat. That's how you generate heat, you know, the way you make a heater in life. When you want to heat a room, is you put in what they call resistors. You resist the heat. You cut down on the resistance. You stop the flow. By stopping the flow of the electricity, it backs up and it gives you heat. By the flow stopping of the electricity of the brain circuit, you get heat generated. So to me, a person who is caught in an obsessive loop has a burning brain, and it hurts. It hurts when your brain burns.
Right, and that term that's been used over and over again, neurons that fire together, wire together. So think of this thought as being fueled by that chemical in the brain that's overactive, it's firing. So it's constantly giving that thought fuel, so to speak. And that's difficult to switch gears, so you have to train yourself to switch to another thought. That's part of the problem. You got to learn how to turn the page to say, I'm completed with that thought. The brain, when it's stuck in that gear, does not shift automatically to another thought.
I don't know where you hang out, but nobody I know says neurons that fire together expire together.
Not but expire, I wire.
I know, but nobody I know. You said the phrase that's used over and over again.
Neuroscience.
Right, in your buddies. Thank God I don't hang out with those people.
Okay.
Let's start off with the very meaning of that. That's important. Neurons that fire together, wire together?
Yes.
What does that mean?
The electricity in the brain that is being sent to the neurons. It's a little complicated for me to even explain it on the air, but we know that there's these kind of pathways, these networks in the brain. Electricity goes through those. So there's neurons on either side of the synapses, or the ends of the neurons are the synapses. Electricity flows through that in our brain. And the more that one thought, for instance, you focus on that thought, there are neurons around that thought. So the more that you think about that, the more electricity that's brought to that thought.
And more than electricity, you know. I think that was a good explanation, Stephanie.
It's a little hard.
More than just the electricity, when you say neurons that fire together, wire together, what you're saying is if you do what you always done, you're going to get what you always got and more some. You see, if you do it the same way, if you worry the same way over and over again, you're going to worry more the next time. So here is the thing about obsessive compulsive disorder. In this obsessive compulsive, you have to kind of fix it. You got to interrupt it. We are saying that primarily, my friends, there could be an emotional trigger, but it is a physical disorder. And this is what we're beginning to see, and it's making us crazy because all the psychologists in the world are saying, oh, no, 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 it's a behavioral disorder. Oh, no, it's a thought disorder. Oh, no, it has to do just with emotions. I would love it to be just about emotions because I'm in the emotion business, but I'm learning it's not. So, you know, you got to shift. Like any good doctor in the world, you got to become more knowledgeable, include more stuff. Here's an interesting story. There was a college student who felt so trapped by his obsessive worries and compulsions that he put a gun to his mouth and pulled the trigger. You could imagine, you get so worried, 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 you can't stand your brain anymore, you kill yourself. Makes sense, I want to end this brain. Usually the people who do it to smash their brains, like they jump off buildings, to smash their heads, they hate their heads. Gun in his mouth. So anyway, this guy puts a gun in his mouth, and pulls the trigger. The bullet did not kill him. It passed through the frontal lobe, causing an effective frontal lobotomy, which at that time was the treatment for obsessive compulsive disorder. So he was found still alive, his disorder cured, nothing else was wrong with him, and he went back to college. Right? And now he didn't have that worry anymore. It's a funny story, isn't it? So there are many kind of worriers, people who worry, and many kinds of anxiety. There's phobias, post-traumatic stress, stress disorders, panic attacks. But the obsessive-compulsive ones, those are the ones that really get you. And you know, most people who have it have this shame about having it, so they hide it. And sometimes they try to justify it, you know. And they say, oh, you see, there it is. So it worsens over time. It generally worsens over time. You become more and more frightened. Worry begets worry. Now let's get to Stephanie's point. Your treatment of it, Stephanie, and the way you work with it is you teach people that there is heat in the brain. You're hot-brained right now. You don't use that phrase, but I feel that phrase. Here's the way it is, my friends. You have the obsessive-compulsive stuff going on, and you get caught in it. According to Jeffrey Schwartz. Now, what did Jeffrey Schwartz, what was his book?
He has a couple books, but one is The Mind and the Brain, and then there's another one that's actually called Brain Unlocked.
And was it Brain Unlocked where he works with this?
Yes. It's about his treatment.
Yeah, Jeffrey Schwartz has a treatment, and also Norman Doidge, who is fabulous, who talks about the neuroplasticity, talks about it as well. And everybody's kind of, here it is, here's what we're learning. We're learning that instead of focusing on the thoughts, such as, I've got to clean myself, I've got to clean myself, I'm dirty, I'm dirty, I'm dirty. Psychoanalytic treatment. Oh, what makes you dirty? I don't know, but I'm dirty, I'm dirty, I'm dirty. Are you dirty because you touched yourself when you were a child? Yes, I touched myself when I was a child. Did you feel dirty then? Yes, I felt dirty then. Well, that's why you feel dirty now. Let's talk about why you touched yourself as a child. And you somehow try to get the person through psychoanalysis to associate the trauma that was associated with the behavior that's there today. I've got to clean myself. I'm worried about hurting people. I have obsessions about that. But, you know, on top of all this, while this is all going on, you got a hot brain. What we're not focusing on is what made those organs in your brain go out of balance and heat up the amygdala and reduce the energy in the anterior cingulate gyrate so that everything is now out of balance and your gear is caught in reverse. And you can't get out of it because it's not automatic, well, actually not reverse, it's in low. And you're in low and you're grinding and you're trying to go up a hill and you just keep waiting for your car to fix itself and you have to do it manually. How do you do it manually? This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. One of the ways and one of the treatments for doing it manually, meaning fixing it yourself, is the recognition that you are in this state. Now, there are organizations, wonderful organizations, throughout the United States for people who have obsessive-compulsive disorder. If you look on the websites, if you look just on the Internet, you find loads of support groups, wonderful support groups, many of whom have written to me over the last few days. And in those groups, everybody knows I am caught in this loop. Now, let me give you an example of this loop. Your mother says to you, or you have a thing that's going with your mom, and your mom says to you, when are you going to get married? When are you going to get married? Oh, I can't wait till you get married. Why don't you call? How come you don't call? He doesn't call. I don't know what to do. He doesn't call. And, you know, and she focuses on this all the time. Now, even though one would think, ah, it's just a grieving mother who's complaining because her son doesn't call, the criteria here for obsessive-compulsive disorder is if that worry interferes with your daily functioning. Ma, can you have a good time? No, how can I have a good time? He doesn't call. He doesn't call. He doesn't write. I can't have a good time. No, I don't want to have my birthday. No, I don't want to blow out the birthday cake because I don't hear from him. That sounds like a loving mother's caution, but it's hot brain. Mom is heated in the brain. She has, her circuit is out of whack. And it feeds itself. The more she worries about it, the more people take care of her. Oh, Ma, everything's going to be okay. So she, it kind of spins on itself, and she becomes more worried and more worried, because now she's getting rewarded for worrying, because people are telling her they're caring for her in some way. He'll call you up. He'll be okay. And it's, you get caught in this loop. You must learn, my friends, to recognize an obsessive-compulsive loop when you see it. Number one, see it in yourself. See it in your mate. See it in people you work with. See it in a friend. See it in the guy who runs the grocery store. Oh, I wish I had. I wish all the people who work in the food business were obsessive-compulsive. It would be great for me. I'd love to see them cleaning up all over the place, lining up everything, making sure everything is accurate. You know, that's nice. That's a couple of, my accountant has this disorder. Of course he does. He's an accountant. He lines up numbers. That's what he does. Beautiful man. But this is what he does. So you learn to recognize the compulsion. You go to a gym, and you watch in a gym. I was in a gym yesterday, and I was watching a person running. And he was not just running for the sake of running. He was caught in the loop. He had brain going. He was doing about 20 miles an hour, and he was at the, I mean, I couldn't believe the speed that he was going at, and he didn't want to stop under any circumstances. And so sometimes you look at it, or you look at it with weightlifters, or you look at it with dancers sometimes. I got to dance. I got to do this. I have to do that. There's nothing you got to do. When you feel like you got to do, and you feel like you have no choice, and if you don't do this thing, you're going to die, you're probably caught in a loop. Because the truth of it is, my friends, there's nothing you've got to do except to breathe. And that you don't have to remind yourself for. So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We're going to continue with this, and today we want to take your calls about this. And I'm going to learn from you as well, my friend. So you feel free to teach me about how you deal with OCD. And I want a special thanks to Stephanie Dombra, who has brought me a lot of this research. You know, Stephanie, you brought a lot in here that I have presented to you. A few lucky people have her as a therapist, and they usually go out of here learning more and more and more. And she does not have any room for new clients, so don't, we are not promoting new client growth. She is as busy as it gets. So we're going to be taking your calls when we come back at 212-209-2900. Going to talk a little more about this. Right now we're talking about brain lock, brain heat, this imbalance that takes place when you have an obsessive compulsive disorder. And it's what takes place, my friends. I mean, you're in there. You have to see it. You have to see it like every time you think about the issue itself. You know, your computer or the thing or worried about this or worried about that. Eventually, if you get trained to say, ah, I've got brain heat, you can learn to do away with the brain heat, which Stephanie will tell us about as soon as we get back. This is Armand DeMille. We'll be back with you in just a couple of minutes. Play some music and then right back to you.
I won't save our souls. Time won't save my soul, no.
Thank you.
dooby dooby. And that, my friends, is the Black Rebel Motorcycle Group. Who knows if I'll see you again? Hey, this is Armand DeMille with you with the Positive Mind, WBAI 99.5 FM. My guest in the studio today and fellow researcher Stephanie Dombra helping me with talking about obsessive compulsive disorder, one of the places, areas of her specialty, always hard to explain. You know, science, it takes magic to really explain it to people, just as it takes magic to explain psychology, because I used to teach a course. I was at Hunter College, I remember. I was teaching in the evenings, and I was teaching the psychology of everyday life. It was such a wonder, because professors don't know how to teach psychology. They teach and say, memorize this. And I was there, and I love to bring to you the most complex subjects. We could talk about anything. We could talk about depersonalization. We could talk about obsessive compulsive disorder. We could talk about anything in science, anything in medicine, anything in, well, my specialty, anything in psychology. But everything is understandable, and you could get to understand everything, and that's what we're trying to do here today. Today, my compassionate arm goes out to the people who suffer from obsessive compulsive disorder. And I say suffer, I mean suffer. Because that's what makes it a disorder. You suffer from it, you see. If you have worries and you don't suffer, okay. But you suffer. Although I could tell you, I met somebody today who was paranoid, yesterday, who was paranoid, meaning that all she did was believe that somebody was out to hurt her, you know. Everything. She said, I wonder what it means that he tried to hug me. In a friendly hug, and she, you know, I mean, it was one of these thoughts in her head, and I said to myself, and she said, oh, I live a very happy life. Her perception of herself is with this in place. She lives a very happy life. Many people who have an obsessive compulsive disorder, like Howard Hughes, right, certainly had an obsessive compulsive disorder, you can get your place, your life to a point of perfection where you feel okay. This is it. This is as good as it gets. No germs. You know, no germs, no worries, no people, no nothing. Now I'm happy. But that doesn't mean that you're living a life. Because here's a real point. If you can't reach your hand out and feed your brother, then you are not living. If you can't reach out a hand to help lift your sister from falling, then you're not living. If you don't have the part of you that has excess and gratitude for the way that you're okay, and for in whatever way you're okay, but you can't reach out to somebody else and help them, support them, love them, then you're not alive. So Howard Hughes, he wasn't alive. I mean, gee, what was he doing? He put himself up in a cocoon and never became a butterfly, you know? So this is why I think, you know, the criteria of I feel good is not good enough. I feel great. That doesn't tell me enough. Manic people from manic depressive disorder, manic people feel great. They feel great. They could buy 100 purses, 100 pairs of shoes. They could ignore everybody in their path. And they feel terrific. Feeling terrific is no good. Creativity. How about creativity? You think creativity is a great criteria of mental health? No. Creativity is cheap. That's cheap. That's just a brain that could see a lot of different things and put them together. You know, what about being able to line up all the ducks? No, that's cheap too. That's easy. Everybody can line up. Not everybody. Half the people can line up the ducks and the other half can be creative. And that's the way it works. Cheap. It doesn't come. Talent is cheap. Oh, you could dance better than everybody else and sing better than everybody else. So what? Love is not cheap. Being able to love is not cheap. Being able to receive love is not cheap. Being able to be part of a supportive human community. Now, that's not cheap. That generates, that helps us grow, that brings us around to becoming better human beings. That takes our genes and changes our genetic coding a little bit, making us a little nicer and a little less primitive, and passing it on to anybody else who may dig up our bones 100 years from now. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. We are talking about this and how you do it. Now Stephanie, I got to go back to you one more time, and I got to ask you this, and I appreciate this, knowing that radio is not what you consider your forte on air, but on research, you're fabulous. A person is coming to you, and they come to you, and their brain is burning. And I won't say what their brain is burning with, but it could be burning with any number of thoughts. Can you think of a number of people that you're working with, right? Their brain is burning. What do you do? What do you tell them? Do you tell them? And they're saying, well, give me a typical fixation. Give me an example of a place where somebody might be fixated.
Body dysmorphia is a really big one. And
okay,
that
good. Let's explain what body dysmorphia is.
Body dysmorphia is when you are obsessed, you're excessively worrying about some part of your face, your body, something that's dysmorphic, meaning it's not in good shape. Okay.
No, you're worried about some part of your body that is in good shape, but you perceive as not in good shape and not acceptable.
To yourself.
Body dysmorphia is perception about your body.
I have too big a nose.
Something's wrong with me, right?
Okay, that kind of thing. My hair isn't right. So you could get caught in that thought over and over again, and you can't even get out of the house. So I see people that have obsessive thoughts about anything. Maybe not the compulsion, but the obsessive thoughts. Okay. So if someone comes in and tells me they have an obsessive thought that intrudes over and over again, first I educate them. I say, okay, let me explain to you. It's a faulty circuit. There's something in your brain that is not working. So first you have to relabel it, explain it. It's not the thought that's the issue or the content. It's that something in your brain is not working right.
My pimple is on my back. It's got to be, but I have this pimple on my back. If I don't get this pimple off my back, nobody's going to love me. It is about this pimple on my back.
No, it's not. That is the obsessive compulsive disorder. You're having an episode. That's what I call it, an episode of obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, the compulsive might be that you're constantly treating this pimple. You go out and you get all these ointments, these dermatology appointments, all sorts of things around this problem. My hair isn't right. I'm going to get all sorts of hair cosmetics and gels to fix my hair.
Pimple.
Pimple. Okay.
Okay, so now I can't go out because I can't wear those clothing. I can't wear that shirt because my pimple shows. Right? I can't do that. And it starts to interfere with your life. And then you think about having a romance. You think about having somebody close to you, but I would love them, but as soon as I take off my shirt, she's going to see my pimple. And that's what that's about. Now, this obsessive, we may be triggering, by the way, somebody hearing this may be triggering a disorder right now. This is called body dysmorphia. So what you do with them is you isolate the phenomenon of the interaction of the anterior cingulate. You don't tell them what it is. You just say to them, your brain is burning.
Or I call it a faulty circuit. Brain burning, I love that phrase. And I like this because it allows the person to feel powerful to help themselves. They don't always have to take medication. So that's why I like this. First, you have to identify that it's not that it's the pimple. It's just that you're doing this obsessive thing and you're caught in this thought.
So, you know, and let me talk about how the medications work. One of the ways that the medications work when they do work is they work specifically at this circuit. It brings the circuit in balance somehow, and we're not really sure how.
That's right.
We have a good idea how, because we've just learned about chromosome 9 and how it relates to glutamate and how glutamate is now active. When there's too much glutamate, there's obsessive compulsive disorder. And now where's the glutamate interaction with the circuit? We're just learning about this.
And it's all fascinating.
It's fascinating. Do you understand there'll be no obsessive compulsive disorder in 50 years? It's gone. You know, it's like diseases from, it's like beriberi. Although we heard of a case of beriberi just recently, didn't we? It's like beriberi. It's like you don't have beriberi. You know, you don't have that. It's a disorder that's going to get treated, but it's on the way. And we are the pioneers. And you, the people who have this disorder, are the pioneers as well. I hate the word disorder. Condition, much better word. It is a faulty circuit in your poor brain. And I have love for you that have it, as I want all of you to have love for anybody who has it. Catch somebody who has Alzheimer's. Look at Alzheimer's and look at it from the perspective of OCD. Look at it from the perspective of they have a faulty brain network. And then they start trying to organize. And you watch somebody who is somebody with Alzheimer's disease doing organizational things over and over again. You know, they got to eat the same food. They can't have anything that's not the same food. They've got to do, they do things. They're trying to organize their brain. They're trying to pull it together. If they knew that this had nothing to do with the very thought, if you could slow them down, but by then you can't get the information to them. But people who don't have the full-blown extent of it, they can interrupt it. Now, Stephanie, what would they do? What would you do? If you say to me, my brain is burning, I'm saying to you, no, Stephanie, it's my pimple. And you say, no, your brain's burning. And I say, no, it's my pimple. And you say, your brain's burning. I say, okay, my brain is burning. Now what?
Now what? First, you have to, again, say, don't worry about the content. You have to decide at this point.
Who's the you you're talking?
Okay, if it's a client that has this obsessive thought, the next thing you do is say, okay, I realize that I'm having this episode, we'll call it. After the episode, it's very important to go to the next thing of distracting. That's why I'm not so sure, and I wonder if the people out there that heard the show Tuesday, when you get exposed, the theory was that to expose to the content, no, it's just saying I have OCD. Then after you say it and you understand, you have to go into another activity. Right away, as soon as you can, it takes a lot of training, but you get into an activity that you like, a pleasurable activity that uses another section of the brain, and you get engrossed in that. And I know people understand this because when I say, haven't you ever had an experience where you're reading a book or you're gardening or you're dancing and you forget about your troubles? There's a place where this happens in the brain for even obsessive people. They can forget. So that is a crucial thing. Now, it can't happen all the time, but when you're in that the throes of this OCD episode, get yourself away from the thought and move into something that you like to do.
I remember once I was on a terrace, and it was raining, and I was fixing some lighting outside. And I plugged something in, and I got this jolt of electricity running through my body, and that thing happened to me that happens to people, where you can't let go of the wire. Now, it was raining, and I'm a foolish me. I'm outside touching electricity, and I'm feeling this jolt of electricity go through my body, and I like it. It feels nice. It was like a hum, you know? So now this, most people don't know. I mean, I think part of what keeps you there is the attractiveness of it. Hormones are going off. Endorphins are going off. So I'm feeling this electric. And I realize I could die this way. I better not stay connected to the electric. And I try to shake it off. I try to let go of the wires, and I couldn't let them go. They were connected to my hands. My body wanted to stay there. So I tried doing whatever I could. I looked around. Nobody was around. Eventually, I threw my body against a wall. I had to throw my whole body against a wall. And when I bounced off the wall, I broke the circuit. And I got out of it. And I said, oh, that was, well, it was quite an exciting moment. And I felt better than I had felt in weeks. But when you get caught in an obsessive compulsive thing, that's what it's like. It's like being caught in the electrical charge. And what Stephanie is saying is, you come into session here, and when you're in here and we have you in that loop, we will train you, or she will train you, to drop that thought and move to another thought and move to another activity and move to another productive place. And we'll have to do it in front of the therapist over and over again till you get used to doing it so you could do it on your own. Or if you could do it on your own, that's fine. Just look at your kids. if you see your kids on there working on their machines, on their little toys, you know, that's obsessive compulsive stuff, a lot of that, you know, playing Tetris and playing whatever else you play. That's, they get in that loop and they love it, and then it gets deeper and deeper and deeper, and they can't get out of it, and they can't get out of it. But if you break them out of it, and you put them into another immediate activity, they could do that other immediate activity even better than if they were never in the other loop at all. There's a thing in learning called retroactive inhibition and proactive inhibition. Retroactive inhibition is a very interesting thing. If you're doing something, and I would recommend this to you, Stephanie, if a person is caught up in a loop, if they are in brain burn, when you shift them, you must not shift them to anything that is the same thing. So if they're caught in counting numbers, you can't have them caught in counting letters. You know, you don't have them caught in counting sheep. You move to a totally different subject. When we were doing studies in school, I remember if we were studying, we'd be studying language. And if we were studying language and then we had to go on to another course, it would be natural to pick up the English course. But language and English were very similar. It was always better to go from language to statistics, from statistics to go then to English, from English to chemistry, from chemistry, you know, on to history. This way, you move your brain from one area to another. You actually shift it. The retroactive inhibition is if you study two things that are the same, if you do two similar things, you actually confuse the two. So you don't get any benefit from it. And like you say, you know, the brain, it wires and it becomes more wired. It doesn't make a difference if you do the same thing. If you obsess about cleaning your desk and then you obsess about cleaning your kitchen, you're not getting anywhere.
The key to the activity has to be pleasurable so that the dopamine and the pleasure centers of the brain get activated. Because when you're obsessing, you're really not working on that pleasurable sensation. People never really talk about obsessing and enjoying it.
Oh, sure they do.
Internet
pornography, masturbation.
Well, that works on an anticipatory reward, not a true satisfying reward. Endorphins, when we release endorphins, that's the true satisfaction. When we anticipate something, that's only half of a satisfaction, so to speak. And that is according to Norman Doidge.
Yeah, you want to escape this one? I got 100 arguments for Norman on that one. We'll have him on the air again soon.
Talk
about pleasurable, you know, I think what the definition of pleasurable is. Pleasurable is not orgasmic. Pleasurable is not orgasmic. Pleasurable is not where you feel great. That's not pleasurable. Pleasurable could be doing something that reminds you of beauty and light. And you know, taking a break from something, you know, it's a place of ease. And here we go back to our ideal condition, right? The calm, alertness. You want to get back to a state of alert calm. See, alertness goes along with the OCD. Of course it does, because you're alert. You have to be alert because you're in danger and you have to be doing something dangerous. But when you move from that to something that's an activity of calm alertness, that's the ideal condition. So now that's what you're trying to shift to, but it is not easy. And any of you out there who feel critical of anybody who is caught in this loop, I tell you, it's like being critical of people because they're short. It's like being critical of people because of the color of their skin. It is not right. You can't do it. These are people just like you, and their brain is a little different. Some of them, I remember one guy named Herb, he used to design fabric. And because he had this disorder, he would do fabric design, and he made the most intricate fabric designs because they put him to work. And very often around the world, they will take people's obsessive compulsive disorder and put it in slave labor. You know, I mean, it's something that is utilized all over the world. I mean, what does it take to pick cotton? You know, what do you do with your brain? How do you shift your brain into doing an activity over and over and over again for which there is no reward? You get into an obsessive loop. Your brain gets that way. Well, this is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. I wish I had more time to take your calls, and I realize that you must be hanging on the line, and there's Michael hanging on the line with you, so let me recommend a couple of books to you that might be of help to you. The Brain That Changes Itself by Norman Doidge, D-O-I-D-G-E. We'll put that on the sheet of paper, Stephanie, so we could write that, so we could have it on the website. Your music that we play and the books that we talk about usually are published, or articles are usually published on the website, thepositivemind.com. The other book is by Norman Schwartz, and Schwartz has a couple of different books that you could find. Norman Schwartz, he's a neurologist, and they're just beautiful. Is it Norman Schwartz? It's Norman. Jeffrey Schwartz, I'm sorry. Jeffrey Schwartz, right. And more research, and we're learning more and more. And to all of you, my friends out there who value all of this, I thank you very much. I thank you, and maybe we'll have you on air with us sometime in the very near future. Next week, should prove to be very interesting. We're doing all kinds of new things around here. But as I said, if you want to get a copy of today's show, you can hear it on the internet at thepositivemind.com. But you could also go to the WBAI website, WBAI.org. One last and final thing, my friends, if you have not honored your commitment to your donations to WBAI, please do so as soon as possible. And for any of you there who have made a donation for an appointment to see me, you could simply just call my office at this point and arrange the appointment. All right? Call my office and arrange the appointment. I'll be back with you on Tuesday. Tuesday? I'll be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends. Bye-bye for now.